You are listening to The Scroll, an audio book about Ecclesiastes written and read by Vance Neudorf. This is chapter 16. Nabal's mother had pampered him, and he had developed a sense of entitlement that made it impossible for him to take advice or accept criticism. He argued with everyone who crossed his path. Up in the king's court, Kohelet had learned that although there was a time to state your case, wisdom listened carefully and weighed out the proper time for action. If a ruler directs his anger against you, do not run away. A calm response will quiet his bad temper. I have seen rulers make mistakes that resulted in great injustice. A fool was given a position of authority while a wise person was demoted. A servant rode on horseback while the prince walked behind. Unfortunately, rulers were often as arrogant as Nabal. They had great confidence in their ability to lead, but overconfidence could bring a nation to its knees. It was the same in people's personal lives, for they often ignored good advice and plunged ahead with their plans despite the dangers that lay right in front of them. Any work aimed at changing the earth in even the smallest way always exposed more thorns and thistles. Problems that had lain uncovered since the dawn of time came to light and bore their cursed fruit. Put a shovel into the ground, and negative things could happen despite your best intentions. He wrote again, "If you dig a well, you may fall into it. If you break down a wall, a snake might bite you. Moving stones can cause an injury, and splitting wood has its own risks. Sharpen your axe, and you won't have to work as hard, for working wisely brings success." Nabal did not work wisely, and his encounter with the snakes was a case in point. At last year's Feast of Booths, a traveling snake charmer had arrived in the market and set up to perform on the platform near the well. It was a rare occurrence, and a crowd quickly gathered. The audience fell silent as the snake charmer lifted the lid from his basket and began to play his flute. The eerie music filled the market, but as Nabal pushed his way to front, the spell was broken. People muttered and jostled to see around him. "I've seen this done with two snakes in one basket," Nabal said proudly to the person beside him. The charmer increased the volume of his tune, but Nabal's voice rose as he turned to those behind him. "And the snakes were huge. It took two men to carry the basket in." The charmer stopped playing and snapped the lid back on his basket. He glared at Nabal and leaned back. His message was clear. He would not perform while Nabal was trying to take his audience away. Someone at the back called out, "Nobody does this with two snakes, Nabal." Nabal searched the crowd. "I saw it for myself during one of my trips to the east." The old woman next to Nabal glared at him. "Well, I want to see it done with this one, so be quiet or leave." Nabal's face went red. He opened his mouth to speak, but the old woman waved her cane in his face. "I said shut your mouth or leave." Nabal thrust his way back through the laughing crowd. He whirled around at the gate and shouted, "I'll prove it to you. You'll see I was right," before stomping away. The crowd turned their attention back to the performance, and the haunting tune resumed. For the next few months, Nabal kept talking about the snake charmer incident, trying to convince everyone what he had seen on his trip and how much he knew about snakes. His stories about snake charmers he'd seen during his travels grew larger, and he bragged about how they had taught him the secrets of the craft. He talked on and on until someone finally challenged him to just buy a snake and give a demonstration. Nabal stopped bragging, and everyone thought the incident was over until Nabal showed up one day with a large basket and a flute, announcing to all that he would demonstrate his skills. Kohelet had watched the scene unfold from his window. Merchants closed up shop and ran over to the well, where Nabal was in his glory, standing tall with the large basket held high overhead. "Come and see, everyone. Come and see the largest and most dangerous snake ever tamed by man." He shook the basket as he stepped up to the platform. The crowd jostled to get a better view. With a grand flourish of swishing robes, he crouched behind the basket and motioned for the crowd to be silent. People chuckled and whispered to each other, but as Nabal slowly lifted the lid of the basket, silence swept through the crowd. Nabal leaned back to play his flute, but play was an overstatement, for the sound was a repetitive drone of three notes that grated on the ears. It went on so long that the crowd grew restless. Nabal gave the basket a quick shake and barely got the flute back to his lips before the broad head of a huge cobra rose from the basket. The crowd caught its breath, for the large snake was obviously not falling for Nabal's music or his movements. It twitched from side to side, its tongue darting in and out of its mouth as it scanned its surroundings. Everyone pushed back. Someone tripped and cried out, and the snake became even more agitated. Fear shone in Nabal's eyes. Beads of sweat broke on his forehead, and his flute slipped from his lips. He scuttled back from the basket, but a black whip of motion struck out and sunk its fangs into his leg. Children screamed and ran, men shouted, and Caleb rushed in and pinned the snake's head to the ground with a notched stick. Others dragged Nabal to safety and rushed him over to the healer's house. Qohelet's thought came back to the present, and he picked up his pen. Nabal almost died that day, but he did not learn to be more humble. He continued to brag and claim that the person who had tripped and shouted had ruined his show. Caleb, it turned out, saved the snake and sold it for a nice sum. The ornate flute also went missing during the panic. The incident had inspired Qohelet to create a new proverb, but out of respect for Nabal's father, he never taught it in the market. The scroll, however, would be a good place for it. He pulled his pen. If a snake bites before it is charmed, there is no profit for the charmer. Likewise, the words of the wise earn respect, but a fool is consumed by his own lips. He starts with foolishness and talks on and on until he arrives at utter nonsense. He speaks of his future and all his great plans, but work is so tiresome to the fool that he never reaches his goal. It was bad enough when the fool was an individual. When it was a ruler with influence over others, the effects spilled out like the grain from a split basket. Foolish leaders were concerned, first and foremost, about themselves, not with the people they were leading. He wrote again, "It is an unfortunate nation that is led by a fool who throws a party with other leaders as soon as the sun is up. A more prosperous country is ruled by nobles who eat at a proper time to strengthen their bodies and not to get drunk. As they say, by idleness the rafters sag, and through laziness the roof will leak." Putting your faith in a leader was futile, for political changes were inevitable, and a fool in a position of power would then appoint other fools to positions of power. It did not take long for a country to spiral down into excessive waste and poorly thought-out policies. An economy could change overnight, and the enjoyable things of life could suddenly become rare commodities. He wrote again, "Although eating is pleasurable, and wine makes life merry, you need money to enjoy both. So do not criticize a ruler even in your thoughts, or curse the rich in your bedroom, or a little bird may carry your words to report what you say. Instead, give your bread freely to others, and later, when you are in need, it will come back to you. Share with as many as possible, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land." In a broken world, disasters would continue to come in due season. Political and natural problems would make war or famine a sudden reality. And that reality fueled the fear of being caught without a supply of daily food. Stories of death and deprivation were a stock in trade of a fear-filled world, and people would hoard and save to make sure they would not be the ones caught in times of disaster. But it was a futile plan, for when an entire country fell prey to a time of scarcity, favorable connections with those who could lend you a hand were better than a full storehouse that thieves would break into. Those who survived were usually part of a community that had learned to share with others in need. Together they could face the problems that came their way. He dipped his pen. "The rain will fall when the clouds are full of water, and a tree will fall when the wind blows from the right direction. You cannot plant your crops while you study the wind, nor can you reap while you watch the clouds. Just as you do not know how the spirit enters a baby being formed in its mother's womb, neither can you comprehend the work of God, the creator of all things. So plant your seed in the morning, and in the evening do not let your hands be idle, for you do not know which endeavor will succeed, or if both will do equally well." The random nature of the world ensured that people would never know what the day would hold, and the weather figured prominently into that picture. On any day in the market, you would hear people talking about the weather, for everyone wanted to know what was coming next. News about the state of crops was discussed in great detail, for everyone knew in his or her business would suffer if a storm swept through the region. In the end, however, talk was put aside and the work was attended to. The farmers would go out in the field and take their chances with what came their way, for there was no other reasonable option. The door swished open, and before he could turn around, Qohelet felt Benjamin's strong arms around him. He patted Benjamin's forearm. "I'm all right now, Benjamin. The sickness has passed." Benjamin released him and sank to the floor at his feet. His eyes were moist. "I wondered at times if you would make it through." "Because I hadn't finished the scroll?" He was joking, but Benjamin's face was solemn. "No, master. I would rather have you around to speak to me than read from a scroll. You were right. Teaching others is the best way to pass on wisdom." "Ah, you were also right. When the words are written down, they have a greater effect on people. My teachings will have more authority on the scroll than from my mouth alone. I am glad I started, and I intend to see it completed." Benjamin could not hide his smile. "I do love to read it. Even while you were sick, I would read it and hear your voice saying the words. I am almost done, and now that the wedding..." "Oh, yes. I have been to see Dira, and she tells me they have already left Jerusalem and will be gone for at least a month. We are finally free." He jumped up and leaned out the window. "It feels good to move freely about again." He looked into the market and pointed across the street. "I had better go down and help Eli with his booth. The boys who are working for him are not doing a good job. It's a large booth. It will shake itself to pieces if the wind comes up." He turned back and put a hand on Kohelet's shoulder. "I will come back for you, if you would like to come down when the feast starts." "I'm all right, Benjamin. I feel much better now, and I will join you later this evening. I was just worn out." He put a hand on top of Benjamin's. "We've been through a lot together." He smiled at Benjamin and added with emphasis, "My good friend." Benjamin grinned back at him and his eyes brightened. He nodded and squeezed Kohelet's shoulder. "Yes, we have." His eyes twinkled and welled up with joy. "My good friend." Kohelet released Benjamin's hand. "Go now and help Eli, before someone gets hurt. I need to stay here and finish this scroll." He picked up the pen. "Whatever your hand finds to do." Benjamin nodded. "Don't work too hard. Save some of your strength for the celebration." He left the room, and Kohelet turned back to his work. The happy sounds of people constructing their booths added to his sense of freedom and well-being. The Feast of Booths was intended to remind people of the time their ancestors had lived in tents in the wilderness. For a full week, all those in Jerusalem would eat their meals outdoors in a simple structure made of palm branches. Everything was shared, and the food that could be found at any booth you wandered into, making this the most communal of all the feasts. If it didn't rain, some would stay overnight in their booth and extend the celebration far into the night. Eli sold palm branches at his shop, but he always saved enough to extend his market stall over the pavement with a booth large enough for anyone who wanted to join in. Kohelet and Benjamin were an established part of Eli's group of misfits and loners. Even Nabal would stop by, and many times he spent the night there instead of at his parents' booth. Kohelet inclined his head to listen more closely to the sounds outside his window. With his increasing age, it was getting harder to pick out the individual voices in the songs on the plaza below. But even the dull murmur brought joy to his heart and lifted his spirits. With a smile on his face, he dipped his pen and wrote, "Life is sweet, and it is a pleasure to see the light of day. No matter how many days a person may live, each one should be fully enjoyed, for darker days, days of futility, will come. So be happy while you are young, and let your heart give you joy in the days of your youth. Follow the desires of your heart, and whatever your eyes see, but do not forget that God will call you to account for how you live. Banish anxiety from your mind, and cast off the troubles of your body, for youth and vigor quickly pass away." So much of youth was squandered either by legalists trying to frighten young people into following a system of religion, or by fools who suggested they live recklessly with no thought for the future. Even if one were able to live wisely, it was inevitable that the process of aging would create new problems. Yet there were young people who could focus only on their physical problems and their eventual death. Their time in this world was limited, yet they used it up, imagining the worst possible things every minor ache or issue might point to. Living was being consumed by dying. The clear voice of Eli rose above the noises outside his window. "Kohelet, my friend, are you awake?" You've been listening to The Scroll, Chapter 16, theartofwork.ca, bringing ancient wisdom to life. Thank you for listening.